I remember the day when President John Kennedy died. It was a day that's seared into my memory. I happened to be home from school, and I was off sick, and I remember I had the TV on, and suddenly I was face to face with Walter Cronkite giving us the news. I remember the events so clearly. I haven't actually stopped to think about the actual date. It was November 22nd, 1963. But I have to think a bit about that. 1987. Now, that was a year that was notable for all sorts of things, including the introduction of the loonie. But that's not actually why I remember it so well. I remember 1987 because that was the year of the birth of our daughter, Ailish. Boy, that changed my life. 1994, yes, that was the year the Canucks took it to 7 games against the Rangers. But mostly for me, that year was about watching that series with my brand new son, Connell. He was lovely. I always have trouble remembering the exact year of this, but I certainly remember the event of Princess Diana dying. It was quite shocking. I had to look up the year. Does anyone remember offhand what it is? Very good. 1997. 2001, of course, is a year that many of us associate with the terrorist attacks in New York City on the Twin Towers. But for me, the number one thing I will remember about that year will be the death of my friend Kip. Surprisingly, and this is surprising to me, I was thinking about this the other day, and of course I remember the passing of my mom, the death of my mom, really, really well. I always have trouble remembering what year it was. It wasn't that long ago. It was 2013. Mostly I remember the event. I don't remember the year. And that's actually how we tend to keep track of things. We tend not to keep track of things by date, but we tend to keep track of things by the significant events of the time. It's how we keep order. That's one of the key features of remembering history in the church. It's probably true with most institutions. I just happen to know the church best. But one of the ways we keep order in the church, we keep order of our history, isn't so much by the year that things happened. It's just about always by who was the minister when such and such occurred. And so we'll say, you know, the Reverend so-and-so was the minister when this happened. And so often we're hazy on the exact year, but we know who is occupying the position of pastor. And it's a bit like the biblical account, and they parallel in some way. The biblical account of the nation of Israel. There's some good kings and there's some bad kings. There's some good pastors. That's how our passage today begins, of course. In the year that King Uzziah died. King Uzziah, he was one of the kings in the southern kingdom of Judah in Israel. Uzziah was himself the son of King Amaziah. He was eventually succeeded by his own son, Jotham. He would become king. When he was 16 years old, he became king, actually alongside his father, Amaziah. They believed in the on-the-job apprentice model of training, it seems. And so they reigned together for a while, and he reigned for a long time, 52 years, nearly as much as our queen. He was generally considered one of the good kings of Israel, though he did show some rather unseemly pride a little later in his career, and he was rewarded for that by getting a case of some nasty leprosy-like skin disease that kept him cloistered away from the general public after that. Scholars' best guess for his actual years of reign are 792 to 740 BCE. But for most of us who read and listen to the biblical story, King Uzziah is best known for his death. For the mention of the year of his passing, which of course is the backstory for the setting for the call of the prophet Isaiah. In the year that King Uzziah died, 740 years before the birth of Jesus, God called Isaiah to be his prophet. You'll remember from last week, as we considered the situation of the prophet Ezekiel, who actually lived a full century after Isaiah, that we reflected on the challenge of living next to a powerful empire. In Ezekiel's case, now Israel was hedged between both Babylon and Egypt. But in Isaiah's time, it was Assyria. That was the major empire of the time. And against the very real threat of Assyria, a threat which would indeed result in the destruction of that northern kingdom of Israel, Isaiah kept calling people to faithfulness. But that call, that mission, was of course preceded by his own call. It was the year that King Uzziah died that the soon-to-be prophet Isaiah caught a glimpse of God sitting on a throne high and lifted up, the swirl and the smell of incense filling the throne room of the Lord. And amidst the smoke and the presence of the most elevated of all the angels, the seraphs, Isaiah hears God say, "Whom shall I send?" And Isaiah replies, "Here I am. Send me." We have heard that expression before, haven't we? Yeah, when God spoke to Abraham back in Genesis 22, Abraham replied by saying, "Here I am." And when Isaac, Abraham's son, was speaking to his father about collecting wood for the sacrifice, and he was asking about the strange absence of a sacrificial lamb, Abraham gave this heartbroken response. He said, "Here I am, my son." And Isaac, he called out to his older boy, Esau, and Esau replied, "Here I am." And an angel of God spoke to Isaac's younger son and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And Jacob responded by saying, "Here I am." And when Jacob was old and he was now called Israel, he called his son Joseph to go where his brothers might be. And Joseph answered that call by saying, "Here I am." And the Lord called out from the burning bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses responded by saying, "Here I am." Hey, and remember that small child? His name was Samuel. He was what, 10 years old? Samuel was sleeping by the ark in Shiloh. And God said, "Samuel, Samuel." It took a little while for him to get it, but eventually he learned to say, "Here I am." So you're seeing this trend here? When God calls, you say, "Here I am." And there's lots of "here I am" moments in the Bible. And if you keep reading on into the New Testament, you'll come to some stories set in a place kind of like this one. A place by the water. Not one of those big, sophisticated port cities like Shanghai or Rotterdam or New York or Nanaimo. No, no. It was a small place, rather like Qualicum, called Galilee. And Jesus began to call people to follow him, and some heard that call and they followed. They left their families and livelihoods behind them. They heard his call and they said through their actions, "Here I am." And they followed this strange and wonderful and perplexing man. And the world changed. Changed forever. See, when you hear God ask that question, "Whom shall I send?" If you hear it, then I suspect there really is only one answer. Because you've heard the call. "Here I am." This is strange stuff, isn't it? Seeing God's temple, the smoke, the angels, I mean, that's not something that happens to us. I mean, in fact, in most families, church families and otherwise, this is not something we encourage. No, no. You hear your kid or your spouse or your friend talking in this way, well, you know, we're thinking of an intervention. Because clearly they've gone off the rails. Me, I tend to prefer a more measured response to any call on my life. Some consideration of costs and benefits before I go rushing off in all directions. That's why I just get a bit nervous when someone asks me one of those open-ended questions. And you know the kind. Hey, are you free on Tuesday night? Oh, yeah. That really depends on what you've got in mind. If we're talking about dinner and a movie, hey, I might indeed be available. But if we're talking about helping you move your grand piano out of your loft, placing it in the back of your smart car, and then moving it upstairs to your new place at the top of the spiral staircase, then maybe I do have an appointment and, well, you catch my drift. It's that occasion when someone comes up to you and says, you know, I really need a favor of you. In my better moments, I might be able to say, of course. But there's that question that's also going around in my head. I'm thinking, so what's this going to cost me, this wee favor of yours? I'm being asked for a commitment without actually knowing what it's going to cost me. Then again, it really depends on who's doing the asking. If it's someone I really, really trust, well, that's easy to answer, right? If I trust you, then the answer is pretty much, well, here I am. When God called Isaiah, when God asked that innocent-sounding question, that seemingly rhetorical question, now, who would be the right person to send? That question was obviously directed at our friend Isaiah. But don't you wonder what was going through Isaiah's head when he heard it? I mean, my initial thought that he was quickly glancing around nervously, you know, and see if there was someone else in the room. But then I also remember something else that occurred. Isaiah's first response of being in the presence of the living God, remember that part? It was the awareness of his own unworthiness, of his own failings. In classical church speak, he became aware of his own sense of sinfulness, his obvious weaknesses and flaws. He says, I'm a person of unclean lips. That word unclean, it means literally morally defiled. I'm a person of polluted lips. Person of unclean lips in a nation of people just like me. We're all like this. But God hears Isaiah and he cleanses him. God supplies what Isaiah doesn't have on his own. And then he's equipped for the call on his life. So Isaiah sees this and he experiences this and he realizes that God is worthy of trust. And so he says, quite remarkably, he's able to say, here I am, send me. What's no less remarkable is what he doesn't say. He doesn't say, and what is it you want me to do? He doesn't say, so what's the plan, Sam? He just says, I'm here. Please send me. As you heard me say here last week, that's not my preferred way of doing things normally. I lean towards having the bigger picture before I set out on this kind of journey. Let me try a little proof texting here. Let me proof text Jesus. This is from Luke chapter 14, verse 28. You remember this one? For which of you intending to build a tower doesn't first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? See there, that's cute. I've managed to stick handle that one, okay. We can get out of that command on our lives. Well, no, not quite. See, the context of this verse is actually a larger one about being aware that there's a cost to being a follower of Jesus. We'll be required to leave some things behind if we're going to go about his task. It's not really about knowing everything beforehand. In fact, if you need to know everything beforehand, you'll never do anything at all. Certainly don't recommend marriage or having children. We talk regularly about the notion of being called in the church. At least for people like me, we like to talk about it. In the United Church and elsewhere, we refer to people being called into the ministry. And when we see one of those pastors move to a new congregation, we say that so-and-so was called to that particular church. But have you ever thought that that might be a slightly limited view of the word called? Let me try this one out for size. For better or for worse, I got called here in 1993, and God willing, at least from my perspective, God willing, you got me here for another like 5 years, okay? Put that on your calendar. At which point, I'm hoping that the United Church Pension Fund hasn't been comprehensively reviewed out of existence, and then I can turn my eyes to whatever it is God wants me to be about then. But despite all good sense, I got called here 22 years ago. But maybe, I mean, have you ever thought that just maybe you got called here as well? I mean, why are you here? Years ago, I asked someone why they had chosen to come to St. Stephen's instead of going to Knox United Church, which struck me as being a little closer to them. And, you know, I was hoping that they might say something like, you know, well, it's the preaching. Not likely. No, they told me that it was easier to turn right on the highway to come to Qualicum rather than to turn left across traffic to go to Parksville. Really? Yeah, that was humbling. But aside from that critically important factor of which way you turn, why are you here? I mean, I hope you've thought about this. But I know with certainty, having had conversations with a good number of you, that you were indeed called here. Because for some of you, you're actually surprised to find yourself here. Why are you here? What brought you here? For those of you who are brand new, that might be an easy question to answer, but I would say it's no less important for those of you who've been here a long time. And don't stop at the easy answer, like a surface answer. You know, my friend brought me here, or I like the singing, or I need a morning away from my spouse, you know. All good reasons, but there's something below those. There's a call in there. Whom shall I send? God asked that day. And Isaiah, he didn't stop to count the cost, didn't measure benefit versus expenditure, didn't ask for a detailed plan. He just heard the call and he said, send me. There was something in the call that made everything else irrelevant. When Jesus called Peter and Matthew and James and John and the Marys and Andrew, when he called them, they followed. Why on earth did they do that? Near the end of John's Gospel, the author of the book writes how, and I quote, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which aren't written in this book. That suggests to me that there's a whole bunch of this story. There's all sorts of stuff that remains untold that would be neat to have in the biblical story, but we don't. What were the Marys and the Levis and the James and Johns doing prior to their experience of Jesus' call? What were their lives like?
Chasing the kids around.
They were chasing their kids around, I think. You see, I have the feeling that they were yearning for something. They may not even been aware of it, but they were yearning for something. And that yearning was met and embraced and nourished in this seeming sudden call on their lives. Some people, like Isaiah, they're transported to the throne room of the living God in an experience that has undeniable intensity and it completely rocks their world. Yet from my experience of listening to church people, this does indeed happen, though it doesn't happen in large numbers. Mostly it's more of a low-key kind of thing. So low-key that it doesn't actually seem at first like God might be in it. More often than not, it begins with this sense of yearning. An awareness that there's something missing. Or simply feeling curious about things. God, it seems, is very much in the calling and in the sending business. Have you ever wondered what God's calling you to do in your life? I'm betting you have. Because you're here. Has me guessing that you've been called. Your presence here today is very much a manifestation of a here I am. Because you're not there, you're here. And that raises for me also the question of the sending. There's that too. God calls for a reason. God calls to send. Which brings me to the question for us to reflect on this week. It's actually another two-part question. The first part of the question is this. Acknowledging that you've been called, where might God be sending you? And you need to remember that as you reflect on that, it may be a challenging direction because, example, Isaiah's "Here I am" was immediately followed by ascending, and his ascending was to deliver a really, really hard message. He had to bring that message to a nation that didn't want to hear. The very young Samuel who we mentioned earlier, he was required to deliver some really, really difficult news to the aging priest Eli. It was brutally hard. And the disciples, oh my gosh, their journeys were tough, weren't they? We know those stories. So you may be surprised at your own answer to this part of the question. Recognizing that God calls us and God sends us, where do you think God's sending you? And only when you've answered that first part, then, if you wouldn't mind pondering this, where do you think God might be sending this congregation? Do the first part, and then the second. Where is God sending you? And where might God be sending us?